Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition. Liftoff of the Falcon 9 and Crew Dragon. Go NASA. Go SpaceX. Godspeed, Bob and Doug.
Yeah, pretty amazing, the launch yesterday of SpaceX, the first time that NASA astronauts have gone to the space shuttle in over 10 years, and it is the first time that a private company is putting a flight up instead of a government flight. Joining us on the phone line to talk about it and to give us some real perspective, some real life perspective into it right now, is astronaut Mike Massimino. He is a former astronaut himself. He flew two missions to the Hubble telescope. He's done four spacewalks. He was the first person ever to tweet from space. And Mike, I've had the pleasure of talking with Mike several times in conjunction with his work with movies or television shows. I am proud to say also was a recurring character on The Big Bang Theory. Mike, I have to think that that's probably your most proud accomplishments of many in your career, right?
The Big Bang Theory one?
Yes, Steve? Sir. Yes.
Well, I don't know. You know. Speaking on your show is pretty good, too. So a lot of good things have happened.
It's amazing. First of all, thank you for taking some time to talk to us this morning.
My pleasure. I appreciate your interest in the program and your audience. So thank you for the call.
So what's your reaction yesterday when you're watching this takeoff, as you've been following this, and then the coupling of the capsule with the International Space Station this morning?
You know, I feel really good about it. I didn't know if I was going to be jealous of my friends or, geez, I wish I was doing it. I think there was a little bit of that at first. And then I think I just got really of the NASA team and of what SpaceX did. And I was so happy to be a part of it, to be able to watch it. I was part of a Discovery Channel broadcast, so that was pretty cool to be able to watch it that way. And I was just so happy. I really uplifted. I think with everything that's been going on in the world, we've been dealing with the pandemic, and now we have all these troubles the last couple of days in throughout our country, that this is I think one thing we can look at and say, okay, here's some good news for everybody. And I'm really proud of my buddies. I know those guys really well. I know their families really well, and I'm really just so happy for them. And I'm so happy we're launching again from the United States.
Yeah, what does that mean that this is kind of getting a kick in the butt, that you know the space program is news, you know, forefront news again. It's like a new day for the space program.
It is, and it really is a new day. It's a whole new era. I think that everything up till now will be put in one category, and everything from yesterday onward is in another category for flying humans in space. And that is that up till yesterday, the only way to get people to the space station to orbit to space was with a government program. And now we have an option of having private companies be involved, and competition hopefully will set in as well. And I think it's going to open up the frontier of space more than we can ever have imagined. So I think tomorrow is a very significant day that we'll all remember.
What difference do you think it will make, Mike, of being privately funded versus government funded?
I think just my observation of it, Dean, has been that they are able to come up with new ideas, look at new ways to do things, with the idea of hopefully one day being profitable at it. And that opens up, with using the technology that's already there, what's been learned by NASA and the other governments over the years, that opens up great possibilities. For example, when I first started hearing about SpaceX and what their plans were, I was not a believer. This is like 10 or 12 years ago. I was in the astronaut office. We'd get a briefing every once in a while about what their ideas was. And I didn't really say anything. I just sat there like, this is never going to work. And then I started seeing them be successful. And I saw them with their flyback boosters landing first back on a pad at Kennedy Space Center. then out in the middle of the ocean, and I was like, I am a believer. Anything that some of these entrepreneurs, whether it's Elon Musk or Richard Branson or Jeff Bezos, they say they're going to do something, they're very credible. So I am totally a believer. I think that they're able to look at possibilities in ways that the government cannot. We're limited with the government, with the tax dollars of America, which for the U.S. taxpayer, which is very precious money, and that needs to be spent wisely. And it is spent wisely. If we really want to do all the things we need to do, we need other ways to fund it. And private industry, I think, is going to be our answer, working with the government to explore space.
Can you talk a little bit about the preparation that the astronauts, Bob and Doug, went through for this flight? Is it significantly different than the flights that you made?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I think, you know, some of the basic ideas of living in space, of course, they're going to spend time on the space station. That's pretty standard training by now. But what they were doing, not only flying in a spaceship, but flying it for the first time. So they had to learn all the systems. Interacting with that spaceship is much different than the way we interacted with the shuttle because it's highly automated. The space shuttle, about 90% of anything that needed to be done with a switch throw or computer input with a very rudimentary board that we had on the shuttle is 1970s technology. This is certainly the 21st century. The launch pad is the same one I took off from, the same one that Neil Armstrong took off from when he went to the moon, but it looks a lot different. It's been brought into the 21st century. The spacesuits are different. Even the ride out to the pad is different. We went out in this old Airstream, which was kind of cool and nostalgic. They went out in a Tesla. So it's much different experience. Their training was more, I think, how to handle the automation, intervene when necessary, and then because of a test flight, they probably had a lot of objectives that I know they had a lot of objectives they needed to go through to check out the vehicle and make sure it's working correctly. But then, the way expected, any lessons learned to be transferred to the next crew, which will be an operational flight.
What do you expect that the astronauts will be doing in their time at the space station, Mike?
They're going to be contributing crew members. They're going to be up there hopefully for a few months. The last I heard was about from 30 days to about 119 days, hoping to keep them up there as long as they can. And Bob is a very interesting guy. Both of these guys I know really well, and they're both interesting. Very smart guys, very capable. Doug Hurley's a Marine Corps test pilot. He's going to be involved with a lot of the operations of the space station. Dr. Bob, we call Bob Behnken Dr. Bob. He's an Air Force flight test engineer, but he's also a PhD in mechanical engineering from Caltech, of all places. He's a really smart dude, and we call him Dr. Bob. Very unusual for an Air Force officer to have a career both academically and as a test flight engineer. So he's kind of a rarity in our in the astronaut office. So he's all about science and understanding that, and he's going to be the commander of the joint operations part, which means while they're docked to the station. Chris Cassidy, another friend of mine, is up there. I think he's the commander of this current mission. He's also up there with a couple Russian crewmates. So I think he'll be very actively involved with the operations on the space station, doing the experiments, and also keeping an eye on that vehicle because they want to see how it performs, even though it's really not doing anything, but how it performs in the vacuum of space, making sure everything still works, the power system still works, it doesn't, the cooling system, how it's getting, how it's doing through the day-night cycles and so on. So temperature extremes and these things. So they're going to be keeping an eye on that vehicle, but also participating in the science and operations of the space station.
Do you and other astronauts just get the feeling, boy, I wish it was me. I wish I could be up there right now and doing all this?
Dean, you know, I used to feel like that. I still dream about going back to space, but I do wish it was me, but I'm really glad it's them. And I think maybe, I don't know if I'm maturing or just getting too old, but it's like, I'm glad it's those guys. I'm very grateful I had my chance. I was an astronaut for 18 years. I'm very happy with what I'm doing now, and I feel like I'm still contributing. And I'm not in the spacecraft, but at least I'm able to talk to you, and I was able to tell people about it on the Discovery Channel and get involved with a lot of the publicity around it and tell people what it's like. So
sure.
That's kind of my role now. I teach at Columbia. I work at the Intrepid Museum, do a lot of speaking. I've got a couple books out. So that's the phase of life I'm in now. Do I wish I had this spaceship when I was there? No, I'm very happy I got to fly the space shuttle. So I'm really, truthfully, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but I'm being honest with you. I am happier for them. I'm really happy for them. And I'm very happy that I'm able to watch them go. And I wish them the best of luck.
Is it possible for you to have, a favorite moment, a favorite flight of all the things that you accomplished in space? Is there one that you look back on and go, you know, I can't even believe that happened to me?
Yeah, well, both of my space flights. But the second one, the first one was all full of wonder because it was my first flight. But my second flight, Bob, one of the reasons I got to know Bob so well is that I flew with his wife, Megan MacArthur, now Megan MacArthur-Behnken, in space. And she was one of my best friends. And I flew with that crew really gelled. We really are like a family. And we speak to each other still. And it was just wonderful. We had an extended training sequence because we got delayed a lot. We ended up training together for 2.5 years, became very close, and it was the final mission to Hubble. So that was a very significant shuttle flight that I never thought I'd get to be involved with. And I got to perform the most complicated repair on the telescope ever, where we took an instrument apart that was never intended to be taken apart and restored life to it. And that, for me, was the highlight of my astronaut career, doing that one particular spacewalk on my second flight with that crew and that whole ground team that we had. The flight director in Houston yesterday was a guy named Zeb. Zeb was, his last name is escaping me. He's going to kill me. But Zeb was in the, was Scoville. Zeb Scoville was the flight director in Houston. And I saw a picture of him yesterday, and he was one of our spacewalk instructors for my flight. So it was just a great group of people I got to work with. And that'll be a highlight that will never be matched in my life. But that's okay.
Well, you've had a really interesting career. Earlier, we were talking with Kelly Humphreys at the Johnson Space Center, and I told him that we were going to talk with you, and he said to make sure that I told you that Dr. No says hello.
I used to call him Dr. No because he never let us do any. We even get requests to do PR, and he would tell us, no, you can't do that. We'd be like, why? And he would give us some reason. And I'm like, well, what the heck? So I just called him Dr. No. So it's funny that he said that. Because I tell you what, Dean, I was able to talk to you because I didn't have to go through Dr. No. You just called me directly. It's like, sure. But back in the NASA days, you had to get everything approved. And my gosh, it was like, no, we couldn't go. I'm like, forget it.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying that aspect of it now.
Well, he was definitely laughing when he told me to tell you.
Truthfully, Dean, just to set the record straight, he was doing his job and making sure we didn't get distracted from our training and make sure the right spokesperson from NASA was doing those the things they were supposed to do. He did a great job. He's a good friend. But I used to kid him because, you know, I think a lot of our requests were crazy. Hey, can I do this? And, you know, NASA Public Affairs were like, no, are you out of your mind? Of course you can. So he was just doing his job. Good guy.
It's a pleasure to talk to you again, Mike. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dean.
Astronaut Mike Massimino.
You bet. Thanks for your interest.
Great, one of our great heroes in America, advisor for the space program at Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum. Columbia University professor, author. You see him frequently on talk shows. And if you watch the reruns of Big Bang Theory, you'll see him on there as well. Thanks, Mike. Good to talk to you. Thank you, Bo.
Pleasure, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it.